Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's weekly dedicated design show. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan. Now, a few weeks ago, we brought you a special show about the design scene in Singapore. Today, we head to a different city on Monocle's radar, Hong Kong.
Our role must be in trendsetting. We're willing to take the risk, and we have the mass and the market to drive a movement for going forward.
Monocle's Hong Kong Bureau Chief James Chambers has interviewed luminaries from across the world of architecture and design in the city. There's an awful lot to fit in, so without any further ado, here's James.
Hong Kong started out as a city that makes things. Later on, it became a trading hub for buying and selling. Now, as it ponders its third act, the city has its sights set on becoming a regional centre of creativity, innovation and design. Today, we'll take a look at what progress is being made in design, checking in with some of the main players from across the industry, talking to representatives from both the public and private sectors, and travelling all over this great city. We'll cross the harbour to Kowloon to talk to a professor at the Savannah College of Art and Design in Sham Shui Po. We'll visit the offices of the architecture firm Hassell in North Point, and we'll pay a visit to the Upper House Hotel to talk to one of Hong Kong's brightest interior design talents. But our journey starts at the government headquarters in the Admiralty District, which is a brisk 5-minute walk from the Monocle Bureau in Wan Chai. After successfully navigating the warren of raised walkways that cut across the busy traffic on Connaught Road and Queensway, I sat down with Gregory So, Hong Kong's Secretary for Commerce and Economic Development. I began by asking Mr. So about the government's vision for developing the local creative industries, and in particular, the fashion design industry.
Well, it is really the government's role to facilitate development of leading industries in Hong Kong. And fashion is something that traditionally has been a core strength for Hong Kong. We started as a manufacturing hub, and then we went on to manage textile and fashion. And then we would like to move up the value chain because there is a wealth of talents in Hong Kong in design, in fashion. And so the government earmarked $500 million, which is $64 million, for 3 years with a series of measures basically to incubate, to train our young talents, as well as to showcase Hong Kong's design. So we encourage people to go on competition, we train them, and then also encourage them for international and local exhibitions so that people are more aware of just the quality of the design and fashion that we have. Hong Kong traditionally have been also a trendsetter. So we set ourselves apart from just a run-of-the-mill kind of textile or clothing manufacturing. But we like to set a very high standard. We like to really try out new things, be creative. London actually is a good role model for Hong Kong. And I think we can learn a lot from each other.
Hong Kong, as you mentioned, has a very rich textile history. There's a lot of very wealthy and curious consumers in Hong Kong. It's very close to southern China and the production facilities in Shenzhen. In a way, it has all the facilities and the geographical location to be a success in the fashion industry. Why don't you think Hong Kong is a bigger player in the fashion world right now?
I think we're already making our mark. If you see, there are a very successful designer in fashion. Vivienne Tam would be a good name that comes to mind, that is coming from Hong Kong, very local, and now very international. And along the process, the government would like to help all these other talents to be able to access the world's market. As I said, we have a very strong manufacturing base, and then moving on, evolving into management, and now really going up the value chain for creative talents. So I think we are making our marks, and that's why the government is putting a lot of resources in this area and helping our young to make it to the world stage. And I think we have a very free economy. The Heritage Foundation of the United States rated Hong Kong for 22 years in a row as the freest economy in the world. We don't pick winners, but we let the market decide for itself. And therefore, it is important for us to showcase our talents for the market to see it and then accelerate that process.
You mentioned Vivienne Tam, and She had to move to New York to really kind of make her name in the fashion world. Do you think that this investment of $64 million, $500 million is enough to ensure that the next Vivian Tam can actually make his or her name by staying in Hong Kong?
You mentioned earlier a larger context, and we don't just look at Hong Kong. And so we encourage our talents to go global. And by doing so, that would only bring the best to Hong Kong and also benefit the rest of the world. And we have that in mind. With the $500 million Hong Kong dollar investment for the next 3 years, we hope to give more avenues for our young people to be able to attain that status. Of course, we will use it very wisely, and we need to work with the industry. The government on its own cannot do that. And as I said, we rely on the market to pick its winner, to see what works and what doesn't, and we go back to the drawing board and see the government's role to fill any gap that we identify along the way.
We're pretty lucky to catch you at home today in Hong Kong, given that you're often traveling around the world promoting Hong Kong. What do people think about Hong Kong's cultural and creative industries when you talk to them overseas?
I think they see Hong Kong as a trendsetter, like the rest of the leading cities in the world, like London, New York, Paris. And I'm quite proud that people mention Hong Kong in that light. We would like to see that as our role in the future. And so the positioning of an artist or an industry is very, very important. You could either be a trendsetter, or you be a trend participant, or you be a trend follower. And each of these positions will require a different risk-taking stance, as well as the resource that you put in. Of course, if you just follow the market, your risk is much lower, but then your return is also much lower, and you will be competing on costs and all that. And Hong Kong is really a high-value-added city. So our role must be in trend setting. We're willing to take the risk, and we have the mass in the market to drive a movement for going forward. And so we must leverage on that to remain as a trendsetter.
That was Hong Kong's Secretary for Commerce and Economic Development, Gregory So. Fashion designer Vivian Tam is one of only a handful of internationally known creatives from Hong Kong. But she chose to move away from the city to set up her label in New York in the 1980s. Eventually exhibiting her creations on runways all over the world. Today, Hong Kong still suffers from creative brain drain, with local students flocking to design courses at prestigious overseas institutions like Central St. Martin's in London. But opportunities to study at home have improved dramatically in recent years. 6 years ago, the Savannah College of Art and Design, or SCAD, opened a branch in Hong Kong, its first and only presence in Asia. I paid a visit to the SCAD campus, housed in a lovely converted courthouse in Sham Shui Po, to meet with fashion marketing professor Corey Kwok, who has been teaching in Hong Kong for 3 years.
Up to now, Hong Kong hasn't been producing a conveyor belt of famous fashion designers. Is the SCAD campus here in Hong Kong changing that?
I certainly hope so. We just graduated our first class of fashion design students. They are obviously going out and doing different things, but it will obviously be years, at least a few years from now, where we'll start to see what comes of that. There are other institutions in Hong Kong that are creating fashion designers. I think, though, what happens is a lot of those designers end up working for factories and for brands that are, just like in other parts of the world, focused on commercial design. It's difficult for a lot of the students to just come right out of school as entrepreneurs. A lot of it comes down to access to resources and to other things like getting a studio, you know, when rents are so high.
You've spoken in the past about coming from an Asian family and that how fashion was not a viable career path. Mm-hmm. And that was in Texas. Yeah. You know, what are those pressures like here for your students in Hong Kong?
I think the pressures probably aren't that different, but I think what's interesting to know is that you kind of have to think about what the Asian values are, and especially in a city like Hong Kong, a city that has built its success around industries that are about generating profit and being lucrative. I think it's becoming more accepted for students to want to go into design, specifically fashion design, and their families are being more accepting of it, mainly because of the fact that we're starting to see that fashion is a profit-generating industry. Venture capitalists are investing in fashion brands, or we're seeing successful IPOs of fashion brands. So because of that, we are seeing that more and more families are willing to allow students to go into fashion design. You know, another aspect around that, though, is especially in Hong Kong, you know, when you send your kids off to school, you still want them to go to the best schools. So if you're studying science or business, you still want them to go to the Ivy Leagues. The only difference is if they're going into fashion or art, you want them to go to the best art schools.
In the last few years, we've seen the government of Hong Kong attach greater importance to the development of the local fashion industry. And it's stated its intention to, you know, establish Hong Kong as a regional fashion hub in Asia. How do you think it's doing so far?
The main entity in Hong Kong that's responsible for that is the Hong Kong Trade and Development Council. And typically in the past, they really focused on Hong Kong as a source for supplying and manufacturing goods. This past September, they launched their newest initiative, which is called Center Stage, and that separated fashion design and fashion brands from what they typically would just do with sourcing and supplying. It's the right step. It's going in the right direction. Is it completely there yet? Obviously, it's not. I mean, this is their first attempt at it. They definitely have a lot of growth. There's definitely a lot that needs to be looked at. One of the things that I noticed was because they're looking to be a regional presence, when we think about the region itself, there are a lot of different aspects that we have to overcome in Hong Kong. And that is, for instance, not everyone speaks the same language. And it's difficult to kind of put fashion designers in this region out there, especially if we're not all speaking the same language. And, you know, if you go to the US, North America, obviously everyone's speaking English. Even in Europe, there are commonalities in what's there. So there's still some hurdles, some obstacles that need to be overcome in order to improve over time.
What, in your view, do you think Hong Kong needs to become a truly global center for fashion design?
Hong Kong is in an interesting space because it is Chinese, but it was British for a very long time. There's been a lot of transition, you know, just in the last couple of decades. And what's brought Hong Kong to its prominence is the focus on very lucrative, profit-driving industries like finance. So to answer the question on, you know, what does Hong Kong need? It kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier in that the design scene in Hong Kong is quite fragmented. So there needs to be more of a push to bring a lot of these different entities together to work towards a common goal. I think that's really one area that we could really expand on, and, you know, collaborating more across different organizations as well as across different industries and different areas of design.
That was Professor Corey Kwok of the Savannah College of Art and Design. Still to come, I meet Dennis Ho, a partner at the global design firm Hassell, and get his thoughts on moving back to Hong Kong after more than two decades in London. And we finish the show by catching up with one of Hong Kong's brightest design talents, interior designer Andre Fu. Stay tuned to Monocle 24.
Can you smell that popcorn? Well, while you're waiting in line, let me tell you about some of the standout guests we've spoken to recently on The Cinema Show. This year's Palme d'Or winner Ken Loach told us how going back to basics was integral to the strength of his winning film, I, Daniel Blake.
Paul wrote two characters which have quite simple, straightforward situations.
Fellow Palme d'Or winners Jean-Pierre and Luc Dardenne told us how reaching the heights of the film industry can have its downside.
Because after Cannes, the reactions were mixed. Some good, some less good.
And Canadian filmmaker Xavier Dolan gave me a glimpse into his creative process.
What matters in making movies is all the elements are working and walking at once in synchronicity.
So now you've heard the trailer, all you need is the main attraction. Tune in to The Cinema Show on Monocle 24 every Friday at 20:00 in London. Or download the podcast now. You'd better hurry with that popcorn though. The movie's about to start.
Hong Kong is in the midst of an infrastructure explosion. A huge subway expansion is already underway. A third runway and new terminal at the airport is lined up for takeoff. And by the end of the decade, the paint will have dried on a massive museum and cultural complex in West Kowloon. While a skyline full of cranes, accompanied by a soundtrack of noisy construction, may not sound that appealing to residents and visitors, it is certainly a draw for architects from all over the world. Dennis Ho is a partner at the international design firm Hassell, which has its roots in Australia. Dennis moved back to Hong Kong earlier this year, after spending over 20 years working for the London-based architecture firm Roger Sterk, Harbour & Partners. I visited him at his new digs in North Point, which is an up-and-coming community on Hong Kong Island that is attracting a new wave of commercial and creative residents. I began by getting his impressions of working as an architect in London and in Hong Kong.
I think it's very difficult to compare the two because the two cities are very different in terms of cultures, people, how they work. The histories are very different, so actually it's very difficult to compare the two cities in terms of its architecture. In Hong Kong, it's very dense, so buildings tend to be very tall, spaces are very tight. In London, because of the historic fabric of the city, so the scale is lower, it's more human. But what I find in Hong Kong is it has a lot of potential to create greater architecture. And very often you can walk around Hong Kong and you can find these little gems that are very exciting and very interesting. But it has not had a great impact on a city like London, I think.
You've worked for two very prestigious international design firms, but neither has done that many projects in Hong Kong. Why do you think that is?
I think for Rogers, it really is a combination of many things. Sometimes it's luck, it's competition. But the other thing is also the way that competitions are run. It's easier for firms like Rogers to work with commercial developers. But whereas for the government, sometimes it's quite difficult just because they don't have an office on the ground. For Hassell, I mean, I think Hassell has a great opportunity to work in Hong Kong. I think it just needs greater exposure and more sort of working relationship with the clients so the clients get to know us better.
So have you come out here to change all that?
I think I've been tasked to try to do that. Whether I'm going to be successful or not, we'll see. But through working at Rogers, I had quite a few connections. So we're gradually trying to meet different developers, go and talk to various government officials, and also trying to identify what the opportunities are in Hong Kong. I think a lot of the opportunities are obviously commercial related, but there are also other things like urban design, design of public spaces that are also great opportunities as well.
What is the availability of building projects like in Hong Kong, and how are they split between government projects and the private property developers?
I think there's quite a lot of exciting opportunities with government projects because they have less constraints in a way. With the private developers, there's a lot of very tight control, regulations, etc. So in a way, there are a lot of projects with private developers, but there are less design opportunity, I feel. Whereas for the government, there are very few government projects, but there are more opportunities to design. I think the government ought to be more proactive in providing more opportunities or being partners with the commercial developers to do projects, to balance the opportunities.
Does Hassell have anything interesting in the pipeline that you can share with our listeners, or is there anything just about to be unveiled?
We put in a bid for a pretty big public project in Hong Kong. And our approach is actually quite different. We wanted that building to be part of the city, part of Hong Kong, and it ought to have some local identity so people can feel proud that it's a project for them, not a project for any international cities. So if the outcome is positive, then yes, we will have a great opportunity here, and it would be a game changer for the office.
drawing on your experience as a lecturer and a university critic, do you think it's still necessary for Hong Kong's and China's young design talent to go and study and work in the likes of London or New York before making a name for themselves out here in Hong Kong?
I think it works both ways. I'm not particularly saying that people or students in Hong Kong or China should be going to European countries or the United States to learn from them. I also feel it's important for students in Europe to come over to Asia because there's a lot of cross-collaboration these days. You know, a lot of clients in Asia are doing work in Europe. A lot of European clients are doing work in Asia. So obviously, because of the histories in Europe, there are a lot of things that are done really well. And in terms of urban design and architecture, there's a lot we can learn. And I think also in terms of the education, because it's a lot more open and flexible there, so people tend to open up a lot more. So the ideas can develop much better. But I don't necessarily think that it's a one-way system. I think it works both ways, that I think this sort of cross-collaboration is very important.
That was architect Dennis Ho of the international design firm Hassell. The final stop on my design tour of Hong Kong was to meet with André Fu. Fu is one of the torchbearers for the future of Hong Kong design. After studying and working in the UK, he returned home to start his own firm in 2004. Since then, AFSO, as it is called, has grown into an international design practice with a roster of global clients and hospitality brands. I met André in the Upper House Hotel over a decade after he outfitted its interior in his signature modern Asian style to find out what he has been up to since then. André Fu, thanks for joining us on Monocle 24, and it's very fitting to be sitting with you in the Sky Lounge of the Upper House on the 49th floor looking out over downtown Hong Kong. You won the commission to design the interiors here when you were 30 years old. Do you still enjoy coming back here over a decade later?
Actually, I do. I was here two nights ago, and it's actually a very somewhat mesmerizing experience because, people were cuddling in the lounge, and it's just a nice feeling to know that things that you have designed and curated 10 years ago is still being loved and enjoyed by people.
You've described your design for the Upper House as a modern, Asian-influenced residence, and you've received plenty of international plaudits for its sophisticated and restrained interiors. How do you balance the design tastes of East and West when working on each of your projects?
Well, obviously, I was brought up in Hong Kong, and at the same time, a substantial amount of my upbringing is out in London, actually. So I guess influence from the East and the West is kind of inborn in me, and I never try to kind of categorize what is fundamentally Eastern or Western. Whenever I do a project, I try to respond to the brief and I mostly to the client in terms of the vision and trying to translate that into a reality somewhat. So to be honest, I never try to gauge between the two. It's pretty much specific to the project that I'm working on and the brief.
The client here was Swire Hotels and Thomas Heatherwick did the facade. What was it like working with those two very British brands?
It was really interesting because Thomas was obviously involved in the revitalization of the mall, which is the property that the hotel physically sits on. And at the time, Thomas was fairly new to this whole architectural scene. I mean, he's known for his sculptures at the time. I guess the idea is really to try to create something different and something that differentiates from what's being offered in the market. So the ultimate goal hopefully has been achieved, and it's still being probably one of my most loved projects. Yeah.
Well, more recently, you've been working with hotels in several Chinese cities along the East Coast. How would you describe your designs for these hotels that you've done in Shanghai, in Suzhou and Hangzhou?
I had a project in Suzhou and Hangzhou, but they were no longer, they were on hold, and it was a few years ago. I guess recently I've been working on projects in Korea, in Seoul. I've done something in Tokyo as well. So the demographics has migrated more to a more kind of Asian-focused demographics. And we're still working on something in London right now, and also a project in Provence, in Aix-en-Provence. So it's an interesting mix, I mean, geographically.
How would you compare the kind of design aesthetic in Seoul and in Tokyo with Hong Kong?
Well, for Seoul and Tokyo, those two are mainly restaurant projects. So they're more cuisine-driven, and it's driven by the cuisine that we're serving. Culturally, I guess, the Korean culture, it's more into more kind of minimalistic spaces. And the perception of privacy is really important, especially in what they would expect in hotels. So we have to divide the space up into a lot of semi-private spaces. And that's slightly different from Hong Kong, for example, where people are striving for the buzz and they want to be in the place and feeling that they're part of the place. It's interesting because even within Asia, I guess Japan and Korea has a stronger desire for spaces that has that perception of privacy.
What do you think about the general health of the design industry in Hong Kong right now?
I think there is a much stronger interest in local design talents. And I guess with the help of social media and with the help of the transient nature of people that are traveling in and out, it's definitely given design from this part of the world a bigger awareness globally. And I think the trend is just, it's just a natural progression from designers from this part of the world, especially Hong Kong, to be focusing mainly on China and just use China as the backbone of design export from Hong Kong. So it's definitely changing.
That was André Fu, the founder of the interior design firm AFSO. The success or failure of Hong Kong as a design hub will ultimately depend on its ability to replicate André's success. The city needs to nurture respected and reputable brands, labels, companies and firms that can first transform Hong Kong and then be exported overseas. At the moment, Hong Kong still appears to be, at least on the surface, a business-first, style-second kind of city. But from what I've seen and heard on this behind-the-scenes tour, there is plenty going on inside offices, classrooms and government buildings for me to be positive about Hong Kong's ability to redesign itself as a creative hub.
That's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Alex Funnell. If you've got any comments or queries, then please send me an email. I'm at hrs@monocle.com. Remember, we're back next week at the same time, and you can always listen again or dip into our back catalogue at monocle.com, SoundCloud, or iTunes. And if you're on iTunes, please do leave us a review if you like the show. It makes it much easier for people to find us. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Henry Rhys Sheridan, and until next time, it's goodbye from me.